Okay, so I think we're ready.
Okay, good. The tape is rolling. Eric, take me back to January 2012. You're working as an assistant professor of German at the University of Pennsylvania. You're struggling to write a book. What's going on at that moment in your life?
Let's see. As soon as I put myself back there, I get a little tense, to be honest. I find myself sitting in my study at my laptop, kind of frozen in front of text that I've been writing for the last 5 or 6 years, I suppose, at that point, a book, academic tome that I was required to write for a chance at tenure at a research university, as anyone who knows that system is familiar with. There's a lot of publication required, and I've been doing okay up to that point, and I really just got tired of doing this project, frustrated with it. I don't exactly know how to explain it, but it just wasn't working. And one of my main frustrations, I think, was with the language of academia, that I couldn't really find a way to express myself that was both proper to the subject and the context and felt like it was my own somehow. And I happened to become acquainted with Twitter by chance at that point and didn't know much about it and had never spent much time on the internet before or social media. And I kind of fell in love with it.
So instead of writing the book that was going to get you tenure, you were procrastinating by starting to
say,
tweet.
You could say that. It's funny because in a way, this was in fact seeking some refuge from a larger project that was causing me such frustration. And but at the same time, it's actually pretty closely related to it. I was writing short texts, the likes of which I'd been reading for the last several years. My favorite philosophical texts are aphoristic texts by Nietzsche, by Theodor V. Adorno, others. And this to me seemed like a way that I could experiment with that myself. So,
I mean, what's fascinating is, I mean, it sounded like you had run up against writer's block, you know, writing this big academic book, but suddenly it unleashed your creativity on Twitter.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. I think that in the past that had, I'd also found that in teaching in a lot of ways, the performative aspect, the kind of thinking on your feet, kind of aspect of being in front of a class. And there was something like that in Twitter as well. But yeah, I would say a lot of the frustration turned into writing about frustration probably more than anything else.
So why was tweeting so much easier than writing academically?
I'm still trying to figure that out myself. But I think that it had to do with the fact that I was playing more of a character, I suppose, on Twitter. The persona that I've developed more than anything is based on this philosopher Adorno, who I've spent so much time with, but also he's become very much my own version of him. And
this is Theodor Adorno, the German philosopher and cultural critic.
Yeah, and mainly known for his work on the culture industry and often sort of lampooned for a great dislike, if not disgust, with popular culture. Yet at the same time, someone who took it very seriously and who gave us much of the vocabulary that we use to talk about popular culture today. And someone who spent time in America in exile during World War II. And so to me, also an interesting cultural bridge, really, between the U.S. and Germany, Europe in general. And so I think that for me, this became a figure who was all about kind of a ridiculous degree of self-confidence in his pronouncements about the world. And so it gave me license really to say whatever I wanted to say. And the funny thing is, though, is that over time, I think that persona that I had developed in the beginning is becoming more like me, or I'm becoming more like the persona. But this is something that I've noticed since I began.
So this Twitter account that you've developed.
I like Twitter accounts. I think you've just coined something.
Twitter account. Yeah, that's an interesting slip. It's called Nine Quarterly. Tell me about it. I mean, what is this persona that you've developed?
Well, it's a voice, really, more than anything. I mean, it has the name Nine Quarterly because it is to have sort of the air of rarefied air of an academic journal of some sort, yet one that doesn't exist, at least not yet. And this notion of nein, or of course German for no, is what a lot of this is about for me. I mean, I call this a compendium of utopian negation. And
utopian negation.
Yes. Well, and of course, in the wonderful kind of at least double sense of that, and that of saying no to something that might present itself as utopian, but isn't, but also saying no as a type of utopian project, that there's something more than what we have now. There could be something else, possibly something better, more likely just wrong in different ways. But there's the potential for something else, and that's what this is about.
Hmm. So you've created these very witty, funny tweets. I mean, just a couple of examples. At Starbucks, I order under the name Godot, then leave.
Did I write that?
Yeah, you did write that, yes. And another great one, Nietzsche said there'd be eternal recurrences like this. You know, it kind of makes you have to think about somebody. You know, it's, I mean, very short, but, you know, there's a little kind of philosophical sting there.
Yeah, that is very much the idea. I mean, I think of it as writing jokes, or sort of a tradition of the one-liner. It's interesting because this is caught on probably most and earliest on about a year ago in Germany, and they've really wanted to turn it into something like art or literature. And so I find myself there being addressed as or introduced as an author.
Because of these tweets, not because of any academic work you've done.
No, of course not. No one's interested in that. I'm certainly not. But it's quite interesting to me is that I think in a way, what I've done is sort of maybe taken a style of humor that even came from Europe at some point, developed in the United States into a certain tradition. One of my favorite things to do are write someone walks into a bar jokes. These things do well in Europe and Germany in particular. And I think that something that they're finding there that maybe hasn't existed is a sense of criticism that is also, in a way, well-meaning somehow, or that isn't simply cutting, or isn't simply snide, or isn't simply sarcastic, but that a critical voice that's also willing to make fun of itself. And that's very much who I think of myself as being. And I think that that's a lot of kind of how this failure is translated into something else, of frustration being expressed, but also frustration with myself, frustration with my context, etc.
So the persona that you've developed is it's kind of pessimistic, you know, a bit whimsical, but also you're a bit of a misanthrope, right?
Yes, I would say, depending on the day, a more or less lovable misanthrope. But yes. I think my persona at one point said that the misanthrope is the last true people person, and I think that that's something that I've cultivated in a way. But it's my disgust is universal and democratic, I guess I'd like to keep it that way.
So, do you tweet in both English and German?
I do, mainly in English. Largely, it has to do with the fact that the audience is now so international. It's really a minority of people who speak any German who follow this. These days, I see most people who are following are coming from South America, from the Philippines, from Asia, and a significant portion of people are in Germany. But largely, there are people who have a great deal of patience for the tweets that I do write in German, although they don't speak the language. People run them through Google Translate sometimes, and I think often end up with a better joke as a result. But I try to mix the languages as well, and I think that's something that German speakers have very much liked. They're not used to playfulness with their language, at least from the outside. With a language that has a reputation for being so harsh and so rigid and so unfriendly and totally lacking in humor.
So I have to ask, what makes a good tweet?
What makes a good tweet? That's a good question. I think that it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with it. I think, as in any type of comedy. You're working with a type of surprise reaction, type of getting someone going one way and then quickly move to another. That small explosion of the joy of contradiction, that's the heart of any joke. And what that translates into in writing, for me, at least in this Twitter format, in which things are passing you by very quickly and without any context. It's simply one joke is going to show up in a stream of world events about one tragedy after another, or you know, your aunt's cat, or whatever it happens to be. So it has to be completely self-contained, and it has to have a rhythm that works for that speed. And if anything, I've started to think about how a tweet sounds more than anything, so that if I go back to my original material of a couple of years ago, I could never write it the same way now, even though the idea was probably good. In some cases, the execution was not. And now it's apt that whatever I've written would become half the size that it was then. And probably the punctuation would be radically different than it was then.
So there's something liberating about being limited to 140 characters?
Yes, there definitely is. It's I've found that it's the little square or rectangle that you fill in writing a tweet is not that daunting blank page of your laptop, in which that Word document could go on infinitely. But this is all the space you have, and in fact, you start to think of it more in visual terms. You start to think of it more in the sense that each letter you write is 10 feet tall on a billboard, and you only have this much space. One of my favorite writers is Don DeLillo, and I know that he's talked about his writing in the past as sculpting somehow, that he's thinking even about the shape of letters, and he's thinking about them very materially. And there is something about being confined to a small space in which you do start to pay closer attention to what you're writing, to the words you're writing. I very much like puns, and you're apt to recognize them more if you're simply coming into such close contact with a word. And so without trying to turn this into any kind of art myself, I would say that your relationship to language does change. And not only for the worse, as detractors of something like Twitter might say.
So do you have favorite tweets that you've done for Nine Quarterly?
Oh, do I have favorite tweets? Not really. Let me think. I guess one that I liked was simply signifying nothing is harder than it looks. That was one of my favorite. I don't know. I don't have many favorites of anything. But I know that it does happen maybe once or twice a day when I'm writing, where I might laugh at something I write myself, which is usually a good sign for me. But it doesn't happen that often.
So tell me, tell me what you've written in the last day or two.
Oh, let's see. I have to pull this up and take a look. I tried to write something on the topic of failure on my way over here, on the topic of the show. What was it? But I never read these out loud. This is going to be a first. Let's see. Learn from failure, friends. It never gives up and always wins in the end. That was one on the way over. But see, it doesn't work with my voice, because that's not the voice I write them in either.
So give me the voice that if you can, put on your Adorno accent or something.
It's much more Germanic. It's sort of, learn from failure, friends. It never gives up. It always wins in the end.
There you go. It's just you've totally changed it. Yes.
Yes. So yeah, it's the Wisconsin boy speaking. It doesn't quite have the same panache. Let's see. Another of them are, and this is the other thing, I limit myself even more in writing these, in the sense that it's not simply a number of characters, but I've developed a good handful of sort of standard constructions that I use that I'll vary in any given day. Most days start with some tweet about, it's another beautiful day another beautiful day to do something. And again, this is one of those ways in which this is a constraint that I need to work with, but it's a constraint that I like to have because it does generate some new idea. Although this, the one I wrote today, was a classic, which was simply another beautiful day to die in Venice. There's simply a number of things that I like to write about Twitter itself or social media. I guess something from yesterday. Another weekend wasted on the utopian potential of social media. Sorry, it's funny. I have sort of an evil laugh when I read these.
So I want to follow up on one of those tweets. Learning from failure. I mean, do you believe this? Mm-hmm. I mean, is failure in some weird way an educational tool, perhaps even a path to success?
Perhaps. I think for me, at least, there might be something to that. And I'm not so sure about the path to success part as much as I would say it's a way of stepping outside of a context that you found yourself in and some rules that you had accepted and some standards you had accepted, some measures of success that you'd accepted, and making yourself question what it is that you actually want to do, what you actually want to succeed in. If success, as it's officially defined in whatever context you're in, job, relationship, whatever, if that actually is something you would consider a success. And for me, I think that my book for tenure was essentially written. I just didn't want to hand it in.
Wait, that's crazy. Why wouldn't you want to hand it in?
I didn't like it. I wasn't happy at my job, and I think that failing at it was my only way to get out of it.
Well, it's worth pointing out that, I mean, you've used the hashtag failed intellectual.
Yes.
Which is kind of a brazen thing to say, I should add.
Well, as you know, there are only a couple of types of humanities professors. They're the failed artists and the failed intellectuals. And I'm more of the latter. Well, this is the thing, though. It's for me. Ultimately, I found that what success would mean in my particular job would not have meant success to me. I'm about something else. I found a lot of pretense in academia. I found a lot of make-believe, pretend ritual. I found a lot of competition where there should have been solidarity. I found a lot of pettiness where there should have been generosity. This painting a bit of a bleak picture, obviously, but one that I think many people recognize who have spent time at research universities here or in this country or elsewhere. And I knew pretty much from the beginning I wasn't really cut out for that, and I tried to make it something I could succeed at, and ultimately I found that there's no way to succeed at that and also be myself. And
so you've abandoned?
That didn't sound very encouraging.
Yeah. You've abandoned your academic career?
More or less. I'd like to teach again at some point, but I've certainly left the life of a researcher. I'm, you know, absurdity of absurdities, on my way in a type of career as a writer, someone who couldn't write. And it sounds promising, doesn't it? Developed an audience with Twitter, and it's without overstating it, I think it's actually a really fascinating little oddball community that's built up around this thing.
So how many followers do you have on Twitter?
Close to 75,000 at
wow.
this point. It's hard won. I mean, the first year of this was mainly hundreds. You know, it was And it's actually hard work in the sense of you might have a big growth in numbers very quickly for one reason or another, but typically it's pretty predictable in the sense of I know that the more I write, the more followers there are. And this silly little project of mine that in some ways, you know, I decided to do instead of succeeding at an academic career, it's probably the thing I've cared about most and put the most concentrated time into in my whole life.
So how do you explain the appeal of your Twitter account? I mean, Nine Quarterly with tens of thousands of followers around the world. I mean, of this lovable misanthrope.
Well, I think that it's hard to explain because the audience consists of such different types of people. But I think maybe more than anything, perhaps, or maybe what I'd like to imagine anyway, is that even though this is playing a character and an entertainer, a joke teller, storyteller, that it has the entertainment value, I think that people who have followed this for some time know that there's a certain truth to what it is that I'm doing in terms of my own life, in terms of the world that I'm often describing, even though in hyperbolically dark terms typically. I think that, you know, I write about things like love and beauty, and I think that I personally can only take those things seriously when I know that the person talking about them also knows the ugly and the sad and the tragic, and that might have something to do with it as well. At least I'd like to think it does.
So what's ahead for you? I mean, now that you've given up academia, at least for the time being, mm-hmm. you know, what are you up to now? Or what are you thinking about for the next year?
Well, I have
year?
A lot of projects. I mean, right now I'm starting to write a lot for the German press, old media. I have a weekly column in the largest German weekly newspaper, Die Zeit. Which, and when you hear column, you're probably imagining something very different than it is. It's really just four sentences typically each week, although it's spaced out in a column so as that it looks as if it might be something of a powerful poem. It is, however, just a four-line joke, really. But it's doing okay, and that's in German, typically about German politics or international politics or something entirely different. But it's on the opinion page at the political section.
So, I mean, basically it's a column that's a tweet, mm-hmm. more or less.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it's funny because I think that I've come along at the right time for print media, in that I think they often editors have seen this as a bridge to a new audience. And I'm not entirely sure that it is, but I'm happy that they're laboring under that illusion. But I think that it's, there is, yeah, I think, but that more than anything, I think they're recognizing that this is something that is very short and compact and yet potentially has something to say. It's the equivalent, I've described it sometimes, I mean, the secret to writing a good tweet is really imagining it as a caption for a cartoon that doesn't exist. And because you have to think visually and you have to think contextually in terms of dialogue, et cetera. And I think that that's what they're seeing it as the potential for it. So I have that. I've been doing freelance articles for various German papers as well. I have a book I'm working on now under contract with a German press and a Dutch press, working on an English version of it as we speak, which is Nine, a manifesto. And yeah, so I have a number of things going right now, but also kind of taking my time with it and also kind of trying to give myself the time to really adjust to a very different life. And there is part of me, I think, that's still mourning the end of an academic career that once meant so much to me and that I spent so much time working toward. So it's every day for me is very much filled with mixed feelings. But I think that's also what fuels what it is that I do, what it is that I write.
So it sounds like you can make a livelihood, but maybe even a career out of what is essentially tweeting.
Maybe, but it really depends on, again, building these bridges to other established forms. But that's what Twitter can do. It can do something in terms of audience, which can open doors in other arenas, I think, and other venues. But from tweeting itself, no, that isn't realistic. I don't think, not yet. But there's a potential. But as I see it right now, I've already succeeded with this, and that it saw me through the end of a tenure track job. It saw me through a number of difficult things I've experienced the last couple of years, and that's made it worthwhile. If a career comes of it, great. If not, it's been a great experience. Things have happened as a result of this that I never thought were possible, and I don't mean to sound inspiring, but it kind of has been for me, at least. Just the generosity that people have shown me, the support, the kindness.
Well, it makes me wonder if you really are a failed intellectual, or maybe you have refashioned what being an intellectual means in this day and age, and in our, you know, social media age. I mean, maybe this is the truly successful intellectual, what you have become.
In the Hollywood film version of this story, that might be the case. I'm not sure. But I honestly don't think that I'd ever want what I do to be thought of as somehow better than or replacing the kind of work that I used to do. I think that no one gets a joke about Nietzsche unless you've got students out there teaching students, or teachers out there teaching, their students about Nietzsche. You don't have people finding critical theory funny unless they've spent those long hours struggling over a text by Adorno, Horkheim, or others. So I see what I do is really building off of what it is that I used to do and work that I'm very happy others are still doing. And I don't think any less of them for doing it. It just was not what I could do and be happy.
Well, Eric, I wish you all the success in the world, if that is in fact what you are after.
Thank you. If not that, then at least failing in some other more interesting way.
That's right. That was great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. It was fun.